Have you ever thought the educational system is just a mess? That it's designed to produce slaves and soldiers, but not actually educate? So today's guest is actually doing something about it. Today we're going to talk to Matt Boudreau.
Men, your journey to becoming a better man starts today. Grab a hold of what matters and make it count. Welcome to the Manlyhood Mancast with Josh Hadger.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Manlyhood Mancast. Listen, this is a movement of men. This isn't just Josh Hatcher talking to random people on the internet. This is a movement of men who are trying to become even better men. We want to help you do that. And so the podcast and the blog and the things that we're putting out there, this is something that I'm putting out there because I'm investing in this movement. But the movement is really you. The movement is you becoming the man you were meant to be. The movement is you being a better husband, being a better father, being a better leader. And I'm really glad that you decided to do that. Now, let's do it together. So if you want to be a part of that movement, you want to communicate with other guys who are trying to do the same thing, make sure you join our private Facebook group, The Manlyhood Man Cave. Just type that in on Facebook. Send an ad request. You'll answer a couple questions and we'll get you in the group. I want to see you become the best man that you can be so we can make a difference in the world. Guys, today's guest is Matt Boudreau. He has an amazing program that he's put together, actually several programs all kind of under this Apogee umbrella that he calls it. And he's got a great story and he's got a great push to help men become what they were meant to be, help women become what they were meant to be, to help kids actually become educated and become productive members of society. So this conversation, we talk about that. We talk about sovereignty and what it means. And we talk about a little bit about kickboxing because he's got a cool story there as well. So without further ado, here's Matt Boudreau. Matt, it's great to have you on the podcast today. Thank you for being with us here on the Manlyhood Mancast.
The honor is mine, Josh. Appreciate you having me, man. Anytime I get an invite, it's an honor.
Not a problem. I've been really impressed with the work that you're doing. I've seen you on a few other podcasts and been following you on social media. And I thought that your story and your work would be of interest to the men that are listening to my podcast today. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about the work that you do.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. I'll give you the kind of the high level and I'll go anywhere and everywhere that you want to go that – you know, you think I can help. I tell people I'm a career educator. Most people think that means schools, which I understand. I'm very open about the fact that I believe schooling and education are not the same thing. So was at Stanford for quite a bit, was a public school teacher in California, private school teacher, was a school administrator at both. And ultimately ended up leaving both of those to start schools that I truly believed in, schools that I wanted my kids to be able to go to. And so I created schools specifically for my children, but obviously opened it up to others, and they took off. And so simultaneously, I had these schools that I was building in California that were very, very different schools. Again, I use the word school because people will understand what I'm talking about, but really it was an educational center, a leadership center for young people and their families. And simultaneously, I had the chance to start traveling the world and speaking on stages to Fortune 500s everywhere, and was getting to hear what they saw from young people that they loved and the things they wish they saw. And so I got to bring that back to the school. So those continued to rock and roll, and everything was great there. Along the way, partnered up with my friend Tim Kennedy. Many of the listeners probably know who Tim is, and we decided to build out a mentorship program for young men. That mentorship program for young men is now serving hundreds of young men from all over the world, and we've been going for about 3 years there, but we've since added a number of different verticals. So we now have a program for men, another one for women, one for young ladies on the way. We've got about 200 families we bring through home education, and we are launching our own K-12 campuses this coming fall. We've got about 50 that are launching in 2024, and we'll likely do another 100 in 2025. So that's just some of the verticals that we have going on. We got, you know, payment processing system to feed into scholarships for that. We have two nonprofit 501c3s all to support the schools and support, you know, the families that are going through those schools. So yeah, we're not hurting for something to do, Josh.
That's awesome. I love it. You know, I think that's actually it's awesome for a lot of reasons. One, I related personally with your story. We homeschooled our kids. We actually in Pennsylvania they have what they call a virtual charter school. Sure. So it's like a state education, but it's at home and you have a lot of say in it. And that was something we believed was really important. All four of our kids went through that. Our last one decided, I think her 10th grade year, that she wanted to go ahead and go to the high school. And so after a lot of prayer and thought, we allowed her to do that. And we're, you know, carefully watching her education. And that was then COVID hit. And so it was mostly homeschool anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. True story.
But, you know, I remember being a kid and just not fitting the educational mold. You know, I mean, I did okay, but it was because I don't know, man. I always look at the whole system and I say, something's wrong with this. This isn't working the way it's supposed to.
It's actually working exactly as it's supposed to. And that's the danger, right? So even, and you said, you know, I didn't fit the mold. The sad thing is I did fit the mold and it didn't mean anything. You know, I got straight A's all through school. I remember figuring out very early on, when I say figuring out early on, I mean 4 years old, figuring out, I know the game. I see what's going on here. I see that there's a game being played, so I just have to play the game well. I figured that out in kindergarten. So I got really good at playing the game, got my straight A's, and then what? Like, I didn't know who I was at that point. I didn't know what I had to offer the world. You know, I had nothing. And so I went and did what everybody else did. Oh, I guess I'll go to college. Got my straight A's in college. Turned down a job, you know, a prominent job at a prominent location coming out of it. And then what? I don't know myself. I don't know my skill set. I'm not, you know, excited about anything necessarily in particular that's going to serve me well. So now what, right? So I played the game exactly right. And so the people who have created, you know, this is a generation ago, but, you know, the creators of this conveyor belt school model is what I call it. It wasn't designed for human development. It was designed to build slave workers. It was designed to build obedient, non-thinking, not hard-driving humans. It was designed to break the natural kind of factory settings.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I've actually read that even in America, that's what it was designed for. But before that, it was, you know, the Prussians were using it to make compliant soldiers. So
compliant soldiers. That's exactly right. You know, and so... and was there a time where there was still, you know, it was still beneficial because people, you know, there were sets of the population that weren't getting really a lot of true education at home. And this was a step up for them. It was one way for knowledge acquisition and knowledge transfer to take place. And there were some certain gatekeepers. Yes, there was a time and there was a period and there was a subset of the population that benefited from it. But so what? Why would we use that now? If that's not what makes sense now, if that's not what truly educates a population now, then why don't? So there's people say, well, gosh, why don't you change it from the inside? But the problem is there is no way to change things from the inside. It is designed to stay where it is.
I think there is a way to change it from the inside, but it may be too late. I think it was changed from the inside. You know, a generation ago, it was about making compliant workers, and now it's about making little Marxists.
And I promise you, it's not changing. I mean, I was there in there. It's not going to change. It's not going to go away. And I want good people to be in the system, meaning good people working there, because you've got, you know, young people who are never going to see anything else. You have young people who, for some of them, because we have such a parenting crisis, you know, you have some people that the best humans they're going to see are those teachers or administrators at those conveyor belt schools. So I want good people there, but I will never pretend like it is the way to become educated. And that's why we're creating something completely different.
There's like a million directions we could take our conversation. So let's start with the nonsense that we're seeing now in the education system, where it's you know, you've got, now I know this is an unconfirmed story, that it could be an urban legend, but you've got the stories of, you know, litter boxes and restrooms, and you've got, you know, all of the insane, crazy books that they're, you know, offering in the libraries, and it's really got the entire planet up in arms, and they're starting to go to school board meetings and trying to get their voice heard, but it's not doing what they're wanting it to do. You know, they're actually getting on watch lists for doing these things, just for standing up and saying, why are you teaching my kids this? Why, what is happening there, and why is that happening?
Well, the school system, the conveyor belt system, and this is where I'm going to put the onus back on the parents who are listening, and people don't really like it that they don't like being convicted on this. And I take a lot of flack, and I'm glad to do so. And I'll take a lot of flack for it, but I want people to understand what's really going on. So 2000, I don't know, it was early 2000s, mid-2000s maybe. I remember learning about why the system was created the way it is, and it's not for child development. And then I remember learning that since the 50s, 1950s, there were a plan to subvert and really take control of the teachers' unions, and there was going to be this kind of slow burn where slowly we would take away intellectual freedom of the teachers, slowly we would start to put in these agendas, helping the schools, you know, put in these agendas of, you know, women's liberation and mom and dad, you know, don't need to be together, and all, you know, there's no such thing as gender. Like, this was laid out in the 50s and 60s to be this slow burn to get to where we are. So I remember finding this out early, and I remember going, okay, hey, everybody, and kind of waving a flag with some local friends and family. They're like, no, what are you talking about? You're crazy. This is ridiculous. You're a conspiracy theorist. You know, you're this, like, getting that whole thing. I'm like, all right, man. So, I mean, it's only continued to be true. So it is, it's a union driven deal. There is a very, I will just say, a very liberal, and I don't get involved in politics, but it's a very liberal, leftist leaning control of academia, and that starts at the university level. Actually, you got over 90% of professors in all of our universities in this country who identify as far left. And again, I don't get involved in politics, but what you're talking about is some ideologies that I think are just dangerous to humanity. So academia has been taken over, and it was taken over a long time ago, by people with less than savory ideas on what humanity should be. It is listen to the government at all costs. It is obey, obey, obey. It is, you know, all of this, like, hey, the family doesn't matter. You don't need dad in the household. You know, choose your own gender, choose your journey. It's not for the parents to decide. All the stuff we're seeing, it's been a long tail game, man. It's been there. But here's where, you know, there's a rule in our house that says no complaining, fix it. And I take that very seriously for myself, for my family, for my organization. And I push back on parents to take it seriously for them as well. They're going to school board meetings, and I applaud people using their voice. You know, they're going to school board meetings saying, this isn't okay, this isn't okay, this isn't okay. And then the next day they turn around and they send their kid into the fire. That's on you. When you realize there's something going on and you're not going to work to make a difference, that's on you. Now, I'm not saying that, I understand there's financial situations and there's certain things where it's like, maybe you can't turn around and do it the next day, but I'll be damned if I wouldn't do anything and everything I could to get my kids out of there. If you're sending them to a restaurant every day because food is free, and you know, have grown up with the expectation that food is always free, you know, there's two meals a day that you're always going to get that's free, that's provided by the government. I grew up thinking, man, I'm going to get married and I'm going to go to work. And my husband's going to go to work, or I'm going to go to work. My wife's going to go to work, and we're going to send our kids there. And the food is always free. We only have to provide one meal a day. And we always had that in our mind. But at some point you realized the food that they're eating, when I'm sending them there, there's a little bit of poison in every single meal. And do you go protest to the restaurant and then still send them there to go get poisoned every day? Or do you go, oh my gosh, and you pull them out right away and you figure out how to get that other, you know, those other two meals? That's the way I'm looking at this. And parents are just still subjecting their, you know, so it's that old saying, if you send your kids, you know, send your kids to Caesar, don't be surprised when they come back Romans. It's a dangerous thing, man. Parents need to step up and do what they need, you know, do what they need to do for their kids.
Yeah, I think that, you know, people forget that 150 years ago, that's where kids got their education. You know,
That's it. Parents are always the primary educator. They always have been, by the way, because you're confusing education. You know, people confuse education with school. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. And so they think, if I don't send them there to a qualified teacher, you know, to learn these subjects, as if life demands that. Like, school is not a microcosm of anything we do in life. And people can see it logically, but they're emotionally so attached to the thought of, like, you and I don't know how old you are, but we're not comparing each other based on, you know, I'm 44. So am I reading at a 44-year-old level? Am I at grade level for my reading ability? That's silly. Am I making the right amount of money for my age level? Well, that's an arbitrary thing. Yeah, exactly. Same thing on this side. Right? I don't get up every day and go, okay, what subjects am I tackling today? And I better grab a textbook. No. It's not a microcosm of anything else we do in life.
And I always say this a lot of times, because one of the things, as I'm working with young men in particular, I hear this all the time. They have this, they graduate, whether it's college or high school, and they go out into the world and they realize, I don't have any friends my own age. And they start getting depressed about that. Mm. I'm thinking, I don't know if I've had friends my own age since I left the machine. You know what I mean? Since I dropped out of college, the only friend my own age has been my wife. All my other friends have been older or a lot younger, you know?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's not a microcosm of life at all. You stay with your people in your same data manufacturer. You don't have a choice over who that is. And then people want to get connected to this concept of, well, that's socialization. What? No, it's not. It's not a microcosm of how life works at all.
That's an argument that we heard a lot. You know, because 25 years ago, 24 years ago, I guess it was a little late. Maybe it was 20 years ago. We started homeschooling, you know? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that foreign of an idea, mm-hmm. but I remember we'd get people all the time saying, well, aren't you worried about your kids being socialized?
Yeah, I am, if they go to school.
Yeah. What is your general response to that? Like, are your kids socialized? What does that look like for you
and your family? So I always ask people, what does that mean? What does it mean to be socialized? Are you asking, are they going to fit into society? Well, shit, I hope not. Right. You look at the low bar that society has set. No, I don't want them fitting into that at all. You look at people who are afraid to communicate, who hate their work, who hate their job, who, you know, aren't physically, socially, emotionally, mentally healthy, who don't have any understanding of finance. That's the majority of people. Do I want my kids fitting into that? No, I don't. I don't have any desire for that. So what does socialization mean, right? It's usually it is fitting into some sort of, so who do I want my kids to fit in with? Well, I want them to fit in with happy, healthy humans, right? Who are endlessly curious, who are purpose-driven, who are service-oriented, who, you know, have joy, have peace. That's not the majority of the population. That's a minority. So sending your kids to school and, again, going, all right, I don't know who they're around all day. They're only around people of their same data manufacturer. And those are going to be the primary voices. I don't know what the backgrounds are from those young people. That's crazy. That's a crazy idea that those are the people that should be imparting the majority of the inner voice, right? Young people grow up, their parents are the inner voice, like that little inner voice we all have. That's their parents' voice for a long time. But then as they get older and they're off in school, like you start to gradually, parents start to lose some of that real estate up there, right? And it starts to be anything else, anybody else that's around, culture that's around, anything else that they're consuming starts to make up those inner thoughts. And that's fine. That's a natural progression of things. But I'll be damned if I just go, here, I'm going to put, you know, a bunch of wild cards and what, like, that's, it's ridiculous. It's a crazy thought. We like to say things like, because it's true, you're the product of the five people you spend the most time with. Yeah, that matters. So why would I not be wildly intentional about those five for myself and my family?
Yeah.
I don't understand that concept.
Yeah.
I'm not going to roll the dice on that.
I know as a kid who, you know, back in the, we're about the same age, I'm a year older. So, you know, back in the 80s and early 90s, you know, I think that, you know, before Columbine, right, the view of bullying in school was very different. You know, they're like, well, we'll just let the kids sort it out. As long as nobody's going to get killed, we're going to let them figure it out, you know. And, you know, I mean, I was bullied horrendously as a kid. And as I got older, I started being able to fight back, you know, and got, you know, I fought a lot until about eighth grade. And then I kind of figured out who I was, and I realized I didn't need the validation of, you know, it didn't matter what they said or what they did. Like I, you know, plus I kind of grew into myself a little bit, and they didn't want to mess with me anymore. You know, you know, you give enough bullies a bloody nose and they stop. I look at today and, you know, the last couple of years that my daughter's been in school and the stories I've heard, it's like, you've got these kids who are being bullied relentlessly. And if they stand up for themselves at all, they're treated just like the aggressor. Like not even physically, just standing up for themselves, they're treated like the aggressor. And such a crazy world, man.
It's weak. You know, I mean, it is, it's a weak world. It's an, it's not, it is, it's not a, it's not an environment that is indicative of greatness. And that's what I want for my young, that's what I want for all young people. I want them to grow up in a world that says, hey, look, here is, you know, it was one of the arguments on the socialization piece, right, that I get from parents is, well, you got to send them in, you know, send them into the quote unquote real world at some point, because they got to realize there's bad people out there and they're going to have to learn how to deal with it. And there's going to be people they don't like. So they're just going to have to learn, you know, to do that. That's a lazy argument. So I ask those people, cool, man. So when you're wanting to do better in your career, when you're wanting to move yourself forward, do something better for your family, you're wanting to, do you go, hey, how do I get to, you know, spend a year in prison so that I can be around bad people to understand? Like, no, you don't. You look for people who are doing things at a higher level than you to hopefully get around, to learn from, so that you can improve your situation. So for my kids, for our children, we should be doing that. We should be exposing them to greatness. Here's what greatness looks like. Here's what being socially, emotionally, physically, spiritually healthy looks like. Let's make that the habit. Because what happens is the sneakiest part of school is you're developing a baseline. You're developing a habit. You're developing what is normal. It is what you do every single day for a number of years. That becomes normal. That becomes your habit. That becomes your baseline level. And so if you're baseline for 12 years or 16 years is I just blindly obey whoever claims to be authority. If your baseline is I just sit down while somebody does something to me and tells me what to regurgitate back. If your baseline is somebody else is going to write the story of my schedule, my day, what I'm doing. It looks just like everybody else. We'll say, Johnny, you're unique. But really, I'm not, because I'm doing the exact same thing as everybody else on this, right? Like that is the established baseline. And so then they get really, really good at just going, okay, somebody tell me what to do next. Somebody, now somebody else, somebody tell me who I am. Somebody tell me what to do now. Now, I don't know. I've never taken agency of my life. I've never made choices. I've never been exposed to big ideas. So now what? So now I'm 22, 23, and I have no idea who I am or what I'm going to do. And then I start to get really upset about that. And I get mad about that. You know, that's what we're setting up as normal for the majority of our population.
So with the work that you're doing at Apogee and all the other side projects, how are you combating that? How are you changing that?
Yeah. So our campuses, so we have, you know, these multiple verticals, and it's, we talk about our mission as being reseeding freedom and sovereignty in this country by disrupting education for the entire family. So we're exposing everybody to educational opportunities. So all of our verticals can be standalone. You know, there is a grown man who's like, look, I just need to figure out how to be better. And by better, I mean, I need to figure out how to be in better physical health. I need to figure out what does the financial game actually look like? How do I, How do I, not just financial literacy, but how do I understand money and understand the various games that are there and get really good at playing those? How do I understand how to market and sell? How do I understand how to actually have effective relationships with my wife and my children and become a better communicator? How do I understand my own personal psychology? How do I understand, you know, my own time and energy management? And how do I, we've got educational opportunities for those men or those women or those young men, right, to go through these educational experiences together in a group of other humans, taking on real work, projects and challenges that have been put together by ninjas in these fields, and they can tackle those things as standalone, right? All of those end up tying together because a lot of our husbands, you know, are all now their wives are in on the woman's side, or now their young, you know, young heroes are in on the young person's side. And maybe now the whole family is home educating and we're bringing them through, like, this is what education looks like, not bringing school home, but actual education for the entire family. The campuses are the best, example, I guess, of what we do, because when somebody goes to one of our campuses as they launch in 2024 and they go, okay, my young hero is going to go here as a student. Well, that young hero goes as a student. And before I talk about the day that that young hero goes through, mom and dad, by nature of sending them there, also go through our program. So mom and dad are also getting educated. That's part of paying tuition, is mom and dad also get education. Schools like to talk about creating lifelong learners and educating the whole child. BS. Unless you've got mom and dad that you're helping them walk along to, you're not educating the entire child. Because what happens when that child goes home? That's the people there, and that's, they, parents should have agency, and these should be the ones that are really the primary educators, but we got to help them have opportunities to grow too. So we're committed to the whole family growing. And then when that student is on campus, they're taking on the habits of people who are successful. And I don't mean successful in terms of like making money, although that can be part of it. I mean successful in terms of being sovereign, learning how to take personal responsibility for your own story and for your own journey. So those young people, yeah, they'll still get the academia done, but there's physical education on a daily basis. And I don't mean playing dodgeball. I mean, let's actually work out and understand that physical health is a thing that you can control. So let's control it to the best of our ability. They are learning to think. We engage in Socratic conversation and Socratic inquiry every single day. And they learn to communicate that. So they learn to articulate what it is they believe, why they believe it. They get reps in, again, that baseline of normal. They get reps in every day of thinking through hard situations, thinking through hard topics, having to make tough decisions, and then having to defend why they would have decided what they decided. And understanding how to listen to somebody else. Because when Josh goes, hey, this is what I believe though, Matt, and this is different than what you believe, here's why I believe it. Now Matt and Josh have to engage in civil discourse where we may or may not come to an agreement, and that's okay. As long as both of us have done our job, right, of articulating why we believe what we believe and listening to the other side. But it also, you know, pokes at us to have to be intellectually brave enough to change our mind if better evidence gets presented on something. So we have these kind of conversations every day. They take on personal responsibility on and off campus. They all have jobs on campus. There's an economy that's on campus that they become a part of. They get jobs outside of it, especially as they get older, internships, apprenticeships, and they're taking on real world projects that directly correlate to life. Skills they will actually need in life. There's no more simple way to do it than make it a microcosm of who they're going to need to be as an adult, which means we also need to be able to adapt and change. You and I, neither one of us know what jobs are, you know, most prevalent or what skill set, other than the meta skills of being able to communicate and collaborate. Like, there's some meta skills that'll always transfer, but we don't know what the jobs look like in 10 years from now. So we need to be able to adapt. You know, 5 years from now, something is ChatGPT, right? That's a relevant thing. We need to understand how to use it. We couldn't have predicted it 5 years ago, but now it's there. Some schools are like, No, the reality is it's here. Okay, so what do we do with that? Like, what do we do with it? You know, we need to be able to continuously adapt. So that's how we're approaching these schools, so that exiting, you know, school into the quote unquote real world is a very seamless transition, because it's always been the same and you've been doing well the entire time.
I love it. I love it. I think that that work that you were doing, I'm hoping that that concept and that idea spreads, which is really why I wanted to have you on the show, because I want people to think about, hey, does this have to look like what it's always looked like? Because it hasn't always looked like that, but for as long as anybody can remember, it's looked like that. You know,
that's the problem, right? Like, that's the problem. Because what we're talking about doing, people are like, oh, I'd love to see if your ideas hold up. These aren't my ideas. These aren't Tim's ideas.
Generation.
This is the way it always was until about 150 years ago. And the problem is, you and I, or nobody else, we don't know anybody that was, it's over 150 years old, right? Because they're not there. So everybody grew up in this. And so we tend to look at this as like the way it is or should be or has been. No, this is a short blip of an experiment that is no longer a good idea.
The other advantage that we have now, which is really kind of neat too when it comes to education, is, you know, all of human knowledge is available in your pocket. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if you want to learn something, you can learn it. You know, my oldest son is like, if I've got a question, I don't even try to find out anymore, because mm-hmm. he can find it out so fast and so good. You know, if I need to know, like, I need to buy a new computer, but I haven't bought one in 10 years and they're all different now. I don't understand what DRAM is and all, I don't, you know, all these things, you know, but
yep.
10 minutes and he's got it figured out, and he can show me and tell me, you know, yep. that the way that information is there, if you want to learn, it's available to you, you know, it's all there.
It's all there. That's right. But what you just touched on is if you want to, that's the problem, is we've got a society that does not want to take on personal responsibility at this point. All knowledge is right there in your pocket. You got access to the internet and the library. You got access to everything. But it's the desire to actually spend the time not being distracted by a bunch of nonsense, to dive in and then to put the work in and to suck at something for a long time and to fail at something. We also have an instant, you know, wanting to instantly be good at something problem. An instant gratification problem where you need to really struggle with something. You know, it's the 10,000, I don't even like the 10,000 hour rule. I like Naval Ravikant's version of it, where he says it's 10,000 iterations. You got to fail at something a bunch. But, you know, we have people who don't have the cojones at this point, or don't have the leadership to go forward and fail. And to be fair, we've got so many more distractions than we've ever had. So there's a lot of distracted people.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. Yeah, the internet is full of funny cat videos. So
I guess that's what I hear.
So yeah, man, the work that you're doing is awesome. So why did you decide this is what I want to do?
Mm-hmm. I remember sitting in a movie theater. So it was actually my first official, I guess it wasn't the first date, I guess, but it was the first time I'd gone to the movies with a girl. And I thought I was hot stuff. I'm 15 and she's the 18-year-old or soon to be 18-year-old, you know, captain of the cheerleading team. And I'm going, oh gosh, I'm the man, right? You know, the dumb 15-year-old thinking I was something. And so we sit in this movie theater and we go to see this movie called Braveheart, and sitting there watching that, and I'm just really excited that I'm next to this girl. But then all of a sudden I find myself getting like sucked into this movie. And by the end of that movie, man, I was, you know, there was a part where it's now, you know, almost cliche, but he says, every man dies, not every man really lives, you know? And I remember hearing that just, and all of a sudden I couldn't care less that I had this girl next to me. I was just in my own head going, oh my gosh, most men really do just have the same month that they repeat over and over. I can see it in my dad. I can see it in his friends. I can see it just all of humanity. Most people are just repeating the same month over and over and over again. They're miserable. And then they're calling that a life. There is no impetus to grow. There's no impetus to go serve. There's no impetus to take on a greater mission. I have no idea what that looks like for me, but I refuse to, you know, lay on the proverbial deathbed and go, man, I did not contribute to humanity. I didn't push the limits and see what I could do. I remember that at 15. Now, I was a knucklehead still for another good 10 years. I was an idiot. I made a bunch of dumb decisions. I did a bunch of things. I call it most men syndrome. You know, there's a reason most men are most men. And it's because they do what most men do, you know, and it's the wide road versus the narrow road. And I made a bunch of those decisions, but that feeling never left. And I was collecting enough, you know, good experiences as well to try to figure out who I was and what I wanted to do. So, you know, in the midst of figuring all of those things out over the 10 years, that feeling never left. And it was, you know, once I got to kind of understanding what I was good at and what I potentially had to offer, and then having these, you know, beautiful young children that I was now responsible for creating better opportunities for, all of it just kind of came together. And I went, okay, cool. Well, I need to serve them, and in serving them and leading them as a family man, I'm going to be able to serve a whole bunch of other people too. And it just took off from there. I didn't have any way to predict what we're doing here, what we're doing now. I don't think that's a possibility. One of the things that I don't like that is a prevalent thought, concept, statement is I need to find my path, and I need to, you know, just lean into my passions. I need to lean into my passions, and I just need to find my path, and eventually I'm going to find my path, and I'm going to lean into my passions. No, you bring your passion to everything you are doing, and you ultimately forge a path. That's really what we've done here. You know, we say in Apogee, we say it's fire aim ready, meaning you take a step forward in a direction that you think you can go to grow, to serve, to lead. You take a step forward, and then you see what happens. Like, was that a good decision? Was it a bad decision? What opportunities are now in front of me? Now I've got multiple decisions to make. Okay, I'm going to choose door number one. Cool. I'm going to walk through this one, and I'm going to keep going. And then I'm going to assess and go, okay, now what opportunities? These don't look like the right ones. I'm going to need to backtrack a little bit. I'm going to choose door number two instead. But it always, always starts with taking definitive action. Always. You know, I get a lot of men who are like, oh, I'm an overthinker. No, you're not. You're an underactor. Take a step forward and you'll start to get a little more clarity. You are now forging a path. So this is me working out, forging my path, man.
I like it a lot, man. That's the thing, because that's what we do, man. We get stuck. I know so many, especially young men, who get stuck, and they have been taught that whole follow your heart, you know, and they have no idea what their heart is telling them, because don't even know who they are yet.
Right.
And I don't think you find that out until you try something, you know.
It's the only way to find it out. Get out and try it. Get out and move forward. Take a guess. Okay, I think this is kind of where I want to go. Cool. Go do your best effort. Like, go figure out anything you can that's going to put you in that direction. Go talk to the right people. Go put some work in. Go give it a shot and do it for a long time and eliminate the distractions around you and see what happens and see what other opportunities come out. See what you learn about yourself.
And you may find out that that's the wrong direction. And so you just change.
That's it. That's exactly right. I went very, very hard down some directions that very much weren't the right direction. But I'll tell you what, it's like I look back now and every single one of those, though that was ultimately the quote unquote wrong direction for, you know, the path that I'm forging now, there were pieces of it that absolutely played into what I'm doing. People are like, oh, how'd you get to where you're launching 50 campuses and you got thousands of people in this program? Like, how'd you get to that point? And I always tell them, I worked at Abercrombie and Fitch. And you're like, what? That has nothing to do with it. And it doesn't, but it does. Because that was part of my path, because I turned down this, you know, prominent job out of college and then was like, all right, great. Now I have no idea what I'm going to do. And I randomly got asked in a mall, hey, you know, do you have a bachelor's degree? I'm like, I just graduated. They're like, well, do you want to be a manager? And I'm like, cool. Management sounds good. I'm not a retail guy. I don't have any experience on this, but yeah, let's rock and roll, because I need a management job and I'm just going to go in there and, you know, do the best I can. Well, cool. So doing the best I can at managing freaking Abercrombie and Fitch stores, Well, guess what? I'm married to a woman now that we've been together for 18 years. That's where I met her. And also, I was serving somebody at one of those stores, doing the best that I could, and had no idea who the man was. And he turned out to be a very prominent individual who offered me a position at his company, which was the next part of my path. Again, not where I ultimately stayed, but it was the next part of my path. And it provided me more opportunities that ultimately led me at Stanford and led me to Stanford. And now that, like, it always matters.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of guys actually who are successful businessmen and they never advertise for their positions. They just, you know, there's an insurance guy that I know, and everybody that's on his staff, he met at a restaurant or a service place, right? It's someone who had a heart for service and a heart for people, and he said, these are the people that I'm going to hire. You know, he doesn't advertise his positions, you know? I just like that story that you tell. Like,
we're the same.
Look for what you want and then go approach that person, you know?
We're the same, 100%. And that's the beauty of what we're building out here internally too, is we're building out now an internal network. So we have a lot of our men who are like, hey, I'm hiring now, you know, for a position at my company. And I'm not going to go put a job description out at Indeed. I'm going to go to all the other men and women that are here under the Apogee umbrella. I'm going to go take a look at the young men that are here under the Apogee umbrella. Cool. Let's go. Because now we already know that the character, the values, like all of that aligns. So of course, why wouldn't I grab one of those folks?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. You know, you know that what's in the program is teaching the values that you represent, the values that you want in your company, you know?
Yes. It's really good. Right. Yeah. Yep. That's it.
So tell me, I saw this in your bio when I was checking it out, about your kickboxing career.
Yeah. So I grew up, there's a gentleman, have you ever seen the movie? You ever seen the movie Kickboxer? Mm-hmm. Jean-Claude Van Damme, old school movie where he goes over to Thailand and he fights that guy Tong Po and the long old braid and all this kind of stuff. So I grew up under all those, you know, those Van Damme movies and stuff. So in that movie titled Kickboxer, there's a guy that plays Jean-Claude Van Damme's brother, and he gets, you know, crippled by the main antagonist and, you know, and whatever. But that guy is from my hometown, in California. So I grew up training under him, and he was the world heavyweight kickboxing champion for many, many years. And so, you know, growing up in that kind of martial arts, those are the action heroes sort of deal. I got into martial arts at an early age and just started competing in kickboxing once I hit double digits. And so it was something I did all through high school. Went off to college and trained sporadically for the 3-4 years, you know, that I was in school, not really doing a ton. And then not too long before I graduated, I was walking by a mat room at the university I was at, and I see these guys grappling and they're doing all these locks. And I'd been watching, you know, the UFC and seeing all those things. So I'm like, ooh, this looks like what some of those UFC guys do. I'm going to go in there and show these guys, like, I can fight, you know. But they were doing jiu-jitsu, and at that point it was still not super popular. So I went in there and got my ass kicked, and I was like, oof, I need to learn more about this. Like, this is fantastic. So, you know, as I started working at Abercrombie after graduation, I was in the Bay Area of California. I started going out to, there's a gentleman named Frank Shamrock, who was a UFC, you know, pioneer and legend, him and his brother Ken. And so Frank had a gym out there, and so I started training with him and getting back into it. So I already had the kickboxing background, started learning enough grappling to at least be, you know, okay and survive, and end up doing 9 fights in the cage before that was like a, you know, it wasn't anywhere near what it is now. It was some pretty sketchy events that they ended up doing. But yeah, it was a good experience, man. Met a lot of really good people. Most importantly, I learned a lot about myself. That's the, you know, really the best part of the whole thing. Kickboxing as a kid obviously helped with confidence and, you know, making sure I was still physically active and same thing, you know, for the cage later, but mostly, man, it was just an exercise in self-awareness.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love that story. I'm a fan of the Shamrocks, so that's kind of cool that you.
Yeah, it's cool, man. They're good. So I got to train with Frank for quite a while, and then, Ken actually put on the first cage fight that I ever had. Ken was putting it on. It was his promotion. And And he called me while I was at work, and I'd always been a huge fan, you know, of him too. And I get this phone call, and he's like, hey, this is Ken Shamrock. And I'm like, what? You know, Ken Shamrock's calling me, you know, and is like, hey, do you want to come try out? This is before the IFL started. He's like, do you want to come try out for, I'm going to have an IFL team out of Reno. You know, do you want to come try out for it? I'm like, sure, man. Yeah. Like, I just want to come out there and have the experience, whether that's something that, yeah, you bet. I'll be out there. He's like, all right, cool, man. Well, you know, like Saturday, we're going to have this at my house. Like, we're going to have the tryouts at my house. Like, do you want to come out there and do the tryouts? And then we're going to go over to the gym and get out. I'm like, yep, I'll be there. He's like, all right, cool. So he hangs up, calls me back a few minutes later. And he's like, actually, how much do you weigh right now? I told him, he says, all right, so you think you can make 170 by, you know, Thursday? I'm like, what? He said, because weigh-ins would be Thursday. You can actually fight on the card on Friday if you want, and then come do the tryouts on Saturday. So I was like, okay, yep, sounds good. I'll make the weight. Like, let's do it. So, you know, I end up having a horrible weight cut, but getting there, going up there, not knowing who I'm, like, this is my first fight. I'm like, I have no idea who I'm fighting. I have no idea what's going on. There were no, you know, it was not to throw Ken under the bus, but I mean, there was no blood test. There was no, like, there was nothing. It was just like, show up, and if you can make some weight, here we go. We're going to put somebody in front of you. So got there, ended up fighting on the fight card that night, and then try, you know, the next day going and doing the Lions Den tryout. So it was cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's a fun hobby. Do you still do any of that at all, or?
I haven't in a while. You know, when we lived in Sacramento, I would help with some of the guys at Uriah Faber's team out there. I would help with some of the fight camps, became good friends with some of those guys. But as I start, really the last 10 years as I've been building out everything on the school side, the Apogee side, and traveling, it's been very, very sporadic. We've got an American top team gym not too far from where I am now. My son is in there training, which is cool to watch. I still stay very physically active, but as far as the martial arts, man, I've been relatively inactive for almost a decade. Now, every once in a while, I get out to Texas, and when Tim and I have some meetings, and I'll go train with him, and we'll get a workout, and then we'll get in the ring, and we'll get after it, which is code for Tim beats Matt up.
I was going to say, he can kick your butt, dude.
Oh, it's not even close, man. And there's,
it's,
you know,
like, always, he's just like a ball of meat, man.
Dude, he's just a freaking unicorn in a lot of crazy ways. But so I still get to get punched in the face every once in a while, which is cool.
It doesn't even sound like fun, though. It's been a while since I've been punched in the face. Mm-hmm. I don't think I want to do that anymore.
Yep, totally.
Oh, that's awesome. So, Matt, I like to ask all my guests a few questions, and I'd really like to hear your thoughts on these
things. Yes, sir.
And I think you may be uniquely qualified to answer this one, particularly because you've helped develop a program that helps this to happen, mm-hmm. and help men become what they're supposed to be. So mm-hmm. what does it take to be a man?
I really like that question, and I think it's a nuanced answer. It's a multifaceted sort of answer, but where I lean towards is, and I say this with a caveat in there. So I lean towards sovereignty. It's a desire and a willingness to push towards sovereignty. And the reason I like to use sovereignty as the definition for this, and I'll say even a struggle towards sovereignty, because struggling gets a bad rap. Struggling is like, well, guys are like, oh, I'm struggling with my, you know, marriage, or I'm struggling with my, no, you're not. If you look at the definition of struggle, struggle means to violently oppose something, right? So I'm struggling. I'm violently opposing anything that does not let me be sovereign. And in doing so, inherently, I've got to be wildly responsible. And so for me, a good man is somebody who is going to take the utmost responsibility for making sure he is understanding what the definition of sovereignty is for himself and his family. So he is taking full responsibility on his shoulders to make sure that there are no ties that they do not choose for the family. And I mean ties from any way that you can think of. So taking on that wild responsibility is I believe what I've seen good men do.
when you use the word sovereignty,
yes, sir.
I know what you mean, mm-hmm. but our listeners might say, okay, what yeah. is he talking about?
Well, I always say freedom is my favorite F word, right? I love the concept of freedom and being a free man, but I think sovereign is really the better definition. So in the most basic sense, what I mean is I am at a point, and I've worked very, very hard to be at a point where I don't do anything I don't want to do with anybody I don't want to do, and I'm not tied to anything I don't want to be tied to. And that is what I believe, and there's a wildly massive amount of responsibility that goes along with that. And I can take care of my family in that regard. So it means if, you know, the proverbial shit hits the fan and something doesn't work and, you know, the grid goes down or food's not available, like, we're sovereign. We can take care of ourselves. We are sovereign from a financial standpoint. We're sovereign from a familial, the relational. Like, we are choosing how we live our life, and we are not subjected to having to answer to somebody else. I don't have to answer to somebody else for work. Don't have to answer to somebody else as far as the government goes, as far as we just sovereignty. That's what we mean, is we get to choose who we are and who we do this life with.
I like that a lot. So if you're listening, I think that's something we all ought to be striving for. And I think it's also funny how often we aren't, right?
Man, we don't realize sometimes that how much we're tied to things. You know, that's one of the months in particular, and I think it's month 8, in our men's program, is we take a look at self-reliance and sovereignty, and we take a look at where are you still tied down. And we have this concept of we're in a free country and we're free people, but if you are still subservient to, you know, and again, there's nothing wrong with being a W-2 worker. There's nothing wrong with that. But at least understand that you're not in control there. And are you okay with that? What happens if, you know, that seems secure, but the more you seek security, the less you actually have. So what happens if something happens to that company? What happens if some of the most secure jobs all of a sudden go away, and now what? You don't have ultimate control over that, right? So what does that look like? What does it look like with your finances? If you are paying 40% of your money's going out in taxes, well, you're not sovereign there. You're not in control. If you have to rely on a grocery store for anything and everything, well, you're not sovereign there. What happens if stores shut down? Would you be able to survive? Are you good? If not, okay. I'm not saying you like, that's fine. But now what? So understand where you're not really sovereign, and then you have to make the decision, do I want to struggle to work towards that sovereignty? And again, that's up to each individual. You know, we don't tell anybody what they have to do. We just want to make people aware of where they are and what opportunities there are to get educated and move themselves forward.
Matt, tell me if you could travel back in time, talk to 10-year-old Matt, what do you want him to know?
Gosh, man, I would tell him the same thing that I tell the young men now. Win each day and stay away from the distractions. I really believe our young men and myself as a young man would be better off with the concept of addition by subtraction. The more we can keep distractions away and just focus on, okay, today I'm going to move the needle forward in whatever way that makes sense. Like, I'm going to read a little more here. I'm going to serve a little more here. I'm going to reach out to this person here. I'm going to work out a little bit more here. I'm going to pay attention here. Like, just these little tiny things, nothing crazy, nothing amazing, nothing over the top, just winning each day and eliminating the distractions. We have this weird, we have a concept of like thinking that as we're walking forward, and then sometimes we get distracted. And so then we pause because we're getting distracted by, you know, video games or by social media or by whatever. But I like to tell people, no, you're not really walking on this path and then pausing to get distracted. What you're doing is, life is more like you're got this little wagon and it's just a slightly uphill. And so you're moving forward, doing all the right things. But the minute you stop to get distracted, well, you're on wheels. So what happens? You're actually sliding quite a bit backwards. I don't think it's a net neutral to be distracted. I think it actually moves you back quite a bit. So that would be my advice to young 10-year-old Matt, as well as the young men right now, as well as the men right now. Really take a look at where you are distracted and do what you can to eliminate those distractions, the things that don't matter. You know, Tyler Durden said, no fear, no distractions, the ability to let things which do not matter truly slide, right? That's sage advice.
That is good advice, which is our next question, which you may have already answered, but we'll see. What's your best advice for the men listening today?
For the men listening, you got a couple things that are kind of your golden, you know, your golden calf, right? The complacency, the laziness, the old habits. And so old habits aren't something that you just drop. It's not usually easy for people to just eliminate the distractions and drop the habits. You have to replace habits. That's how we're designed. So replacing your daily habits with things that are moving you forward, being consistent matters. Being curious again matters. Curious enough to ask questions, brave enough to sit with the answers. And go forward and create more than you consume. You know, we have we talked about that earlier, right? The knowledge, all the knowledge is available to us. There's a sneaky epidemic that's taking place for a lot of men too, where they're consuming all of the right information. They're like, man, I'm reading all the right books. I'm listening to all the right podcasts. I'm quoting all the right guys, right? I'm stay hard and go one more and discipline equals freedom and keep hammering. And like, I know all the things I'm supposed to say, but man, my life's not changing. My life's not getting any different. So we get stuck in this cycle. So I was like, I got to go listen to this podcast. Somebody said I should read this book. I'll go read this book. You're better off reading one good book and going and applying the knowledge from that book every day over the course of a year than reading 100 awesome books and not applying any of it. So be curious, be consistent, and go create more than you consume. Mm. Life will change.
Good stuff, man. Matt, I really appreciate you being on the show today. If our listeners want to connect with you, what's the best way to make that happen?
I appreciate that. We're updating everything at ApogeeStrong.com to include all of our verticals. So ApogeeStrong.com is a good place to go. We're most consistent on IG, probably at Apogee Program. I'm probably most consistent there as well, just at my name, at Matt Beaudreau, and glad to help.
Awesome. I'll make sure to include those links in the show notes as well for anybody that wants to connect with you, man. Hey, I know you've got another thing going on, so you've got to get going, but I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, man. Thank you.
Honor's always mine, man. Thank you for having me. You did a great job too.
Matt, again, I appreciate you being on the podcast today. Good stuff. Guys, if you want to connect with Matt, make sure you go to the show notes and connect with his social profiles. Go to his website, check it out. This is good stuff, guys, and I'm really honored that Matt chose to be on the show. So let's continue to show him some love and support for what he's doing. If you guys want to continue to help support manlyhood, what you can do is you can send this episode to a friend if it's something that you learned from and you think that they might learn from it too. You can also leave us a rating and review on Spotify and on Apple or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you like it and comment on the video because we want to help get the word out and tell people that manlyhood is a movement that is doing good things. Anyway, guys, I really want you to know this. I want you to know that I appreciate you. I appreciate the time that you put in every week listening, and I hope that what we're putting out is helping you to become the man that you know that you are, the man that you know that you want to be. I'm hoping that we're a part of that. So just like Matt said in the interview, let's just not let it be information rattling around in our head. Let's do something about it. Let's put it into action. Anyway, guys, I love you. I'm proud of you. And I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Manlyhood Mancast. If you want to be a better husband, father, leader, a better man, you need to join our private Facebook group, the Manlyhood Mancast. Join today. Please help us out with a like, comment, share, and subscribe. And check us out at manlyhood.com.